Good evening, everyone. Good evening. You have tuned in to Paradigm Shifters. Paradigm Shifters are people making a big difference on the planet, in our consciousness, in the collective these days. As we know, it's the time of the shift. What does that mean? To me, it means there's a speed up, a vibrational speed up, and change is in the air. And a lot of us say, thank heaven. Our paradigm shifter tonight is Julie Lohr, and the change she's bringing is helping bring the feminine back up into its right place in the collective, in our consciousness, which has been kind of male-dominated. So welcome to the show, Julie Lohr from Pagosa Springs. Hi.
Thank you, Veronica. It's just a delight and pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I love your book. It's called Goddesses for Every Day, Exploring the Wisdom and Power of the Divine Feminine Around the World. So I want you to talk to me about Shekinah. That's today, right?
It is today, and Shekinah is a Hebrew word. It actually translates as to dwell, or the idea of a dwelling place. And in the Hebrew temple, in the Jewish temple that we know of, that concept was actually seen to be the place where, in a sense, the male god or the spirit of the divine actually inhabited. So that was also the female principle of very existence, and kind of similar to the idea of the Hindu Shakti. So very, very powerful principle.
It's kind of like the womb of God sort of thing?
Yes, that's a wonderful way to say it or look at it. Mm. It's probably the womb, the birthplace, because the idea, I think, is that anything that is spiritual or energetic, if it's going to manifest in at the physical level, it has to have a place to do it or a form in which to do it. So I think that's how Shekinah was perceived.
Well, I really like that. I don't think I've ever heard that. That's quite a thorough description, isn't it?
It was interesting how many things I discovered on this journey.
So how did you get on this journey? I noticed you're an astrologer and you do archetypal astrology or goddess astrology. I can't remember exactly.
Yes, I have a new thing I've actually sort of explored and discovered, and had something that's revealed itself to me. But it's been a really long journey, mm-hmm. probably since age 20, really, and I hate to admit how many decades that's been, but this particular book grew out of a project. Someone hired me about 5 years ago, a little more than 5 years ago, to ghostwrite a novel. And the novel was set in biblical times, 2,000 years ago, and sort of what we think of as that period. It's a time I didn't know a lot about. And growing up Catholic, you know, Catholics, we always joke, didn't study the Bible, and it was probably true for me, too.
So I was really Catholic as well.
I didn't have a lot of data for that. So I started on a great deal of research, and the more I researched about the time, the farther back in time I went. And even though I sort of had a rough idea, I became, I don't know what the right word is, I don't know that angry is the right word, but just shocked that there was so much that I didn't know, and so much that we're not taught in school, or that's been forgotten, or even suppressed about the sacred feminine. Of course, it's a big subject, right, about a lot of ancient history, and I just...
But actually, that one is core for pretty much everything that we're dealing with today, even the economic stuff and even the political stuff.
That's right. Mm-hmm. That's absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Graham Hancock, who you probably know that name, has an expression I love. He said, humanity is a species with amnesia, and I think it's really true. So in some cases, we've forgotten. In other cases, it's either been destroyed or deliberately suppressed.
Yeah, and the deliberate suppression is pretty interesting, isn't it? Because that's just political control, right?
It is. Yeah, that's a whole subject unto itself, isn't it? I mean, we probably talk for days just on that one. So my sort of mantra or mission related to the sacred feminine was to, my goal was to at least present as much as I could in a context that I hoped would be approachable for anybody at any age or stage of their life, and of course it appeals mostly to women, but men are responding too. I wanted to give a sense of how pervasive this idea, this archetype of the sacred feminine has been in every culture around the world. Mm-hmm. So that was sort of the whole thrust of it.
Is it suppressed in every culture around the world or just...
No, it isn't actually. Mm-hmm. It's mostly just been suppressed in, I guess, what we'd call the civilized or the more first world sort of countries. Because truly in many indigenous cultures around the world, I mean, we could speak of Hawaii, certainly. We could speak of India. We can speak of the Maori or... the Aborigines of Australia. We can speak about the indigenous people of Africa, and the idea of a sacred feminine principle is alive and well in all of those places.
Do you think it's the countries where ambition and getting somewhere really was like the drive that sort of locked it out?
I wish I could answer that definitively. What I have a sense of, and your whole topic of paradigm shifters, I think, really relates to this. But my sense is that through what we call the astrological ages, we came to the age of Aries and heroes and then the age of Pisces. And I think what might have been happening is humanity at this go-round on the wheel was striving to develop the left brain, if you will, the more rational part of our consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I think in an effort to do that, we've just gone so far to the extreme and not done it very well. So I think that...
in the name of progress.
Yeah, in the name of progress.
And there has been progress. I mean, really. Yeah.
In the name of technology and in the name of all those things that we probably enjoy. But my feeling is that as a species in the what I'll call the West... we've ruptured the mind and heart, and we've separated these parts of ourselves. And part of that is because we've lost for a long time, it's changing, mm-hmm. this whole sense of what it means to be feminine.
Mm-hmm. Whether we're even allowed to be.
Oh, yeah. We could talk about that, too. I mean, it's just, and of course, that's true for males as well, because we know that we all have both. Mm-hmm. Regardless of the gender that we have or the body that we're in, we each have both of the different qualities or all of the different qualities. And I think part of the damage that's been done, which is playing out in our politics in America for sure, mm-hmm. is this tremendous polarization. Mm-hmm. And it's you're on that side, I'm on this side, and we cannot find a middle ground. Mm-hmm. And I think that has happened with the genders too. And
you know, Swami Beyondananda, he says that the problem with so many males in power is that we now have a stagnation and we need to bring some heart in it and have a donation.
Oh, that's great.
It is. He's pretty quick, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
Anyway, well, let's get to work on your book, because I notice the thing I love about this book, everybody, is that every day she features a different goddess, and it's like the feeling I got is bringing, I don't know if this is what you intended, but bringing that aspect of the feminine up into ourselves in a kind of conscious way each day, according to how it's described.
Yeah, that's right. And having as many spokes on the wheel of the year as I could get. As I said, I wanted to represent as many different cultures. I actually discovered thousands of goddesses. I was just amazed at how pervasive and deep this tradition and legacy is. So when it came time to finally put it in a format, as I said, that it would be accessible to people and not intimidating, not too scholarly, but also have a practical application, that was the quest. And of course, it was quite a process. But mm-hmm. I think someone can approach every day of the year in a way with a fresh eye, but moving through the signs of the zodiac as a frame, and really get a sense of looking at all these different beings who were revered and sometimes feared, but always present in many cultures.
Wow, it's very exciting. And you used to work in a corporation, right?
I did. I worked in two corporations as an executive, and actually felt like I had a lampshade on my head for all of the time I was doing that, having to hide who I really was.
How did you tumble out into this kind of work?
Well, I went through two corporate downsizings, and finally, in 1993, I had an opportunity just through series of events to get a chance to write full time and work part time to earn enough money to support myself. And so I was really able for the first time to follow my path, what I really felt like was my true path. So that's been
and that was rising in you for years then, it sounds like.
Oh, yes.
And
yeah,
when did you start astrology?
I started studying astrology. I'd have to do the arithmetic. It's been 40-plus years.
Wow, really? Good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, it's been a really long time.
Mm-hmm. And are you a professional astrologer as
I am. I work as a consulting astrologer. That's one of the major things that I do. I do tarot as well. So I divide my time between doing the astrology and tarot and writing. And then once a year, I take a trip to Egypt, which has been part of my life really always, ever since I can remember. I have been fascinated with Egypt.
And what's the link here? Let's talk about the link between trips to Egypt and the feminine and the goddesses.
What links it all together, I'm very interested in dreams also, what links it all together for me is the idea, are the symbols. How do symbols and archetypes speak to our consciousness? How are we, as Jung said, the Swiss psychoanalyst who I admire greatly, he said that our entire psyche, and he felt, like the Greeks, it's actually a Greek word, archetype, archetypos is what it comes from, mm-hmm. is how the universe is actually structured, that there probably are not an infinite number of ways things can organize themselves, but rather patterns that repeat wherever existence comes into manifestation. So it's that idea of boiling that down, so whether it takes the form of a goddess or a god or some pantheon from the ancient world, or as you were saying, some of the archetypes in corporate America, like the what emerged out of the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. So it's understanding those and how each of us may have a complement of archetypes that drives us without our even knowing it. We can be behaving in ways that our unconscious is pushing us toward, and we don't even know it.
So if we were being specific about that, and maybe use you, because we don't really have another person to stand here and be our example, right? How did what pushed through you to get you writing, for example?
Oh, that's such a... It's such a terrific question, and it's something I always wanted to do. Now, we could speak, and of course, that could take us off into another really interesting discussion. I'll try and answer it briefly, and then if you want to...
I don't mind being interesting, although we need to get back to this book regularly.
Well,
right?
It's related. It's really related. In my own astrology chart, for example, and I really focus on archetypes when I work on people's astrology charts.
Is that what it's called, archetypal astrology?
That's a great word for it, actually. I don't think I'd actually termed it in that way, but you may have just given me the inspiration for the best description of all of it.
Woohoo!
In my own case, and this hopefully won't be too technical, but I was born in January. I'm a Capricorn. Mm-hmm. And I was born right before 6 o'clock in the morning, so I have the sign of Sagittarius rising. So we know those two things. But what else is happening in my own astrology is I have the sun that was rising when I was born. And so right now in the sky, the planet Pluto, dwarf planet Pluto, is going over a key part of my horoscope. And it's also touching, and here's where it gets back to the book, the dwarf planet Ceres, which I think I may be able to write a whole book about. Hmm. And so my own myth, my own way I've been living this in my life, it says, because the planet Mercury is involved, which has to do with writing and teaching and speaking and all of those things, is being triggered, and it was together in the sky with this dwarf planet Ceres, and Pluto is touching both of them. So for me, consciously, it's almost been like living the experience and living the myth that I've been writing about, and to maybe boil it down, I feel I have found my voice.
And so it's like pushing the archetype moves like an energy to push, like, for example, your resolution of the feminine empowerment through
you? Yes, I think that's exactly right.
And the writing. And
the
presentation
writing, and
of it.
It plays out in a similar way for everyone once... It's going to do it anyway, but I think it's a lot easier if we have a bit of a map and understand this is what's driving us, or these are the energetic frequencies, because we could call archetypes that as well.
Mm-hmm. And the tarot, I bet you use that for that too, eh?
Yeah, same thing. Mm-hmm. There we're also dealing with fundamental archetypes. And in the case of tarot, they've, especially in the major arcana, they too have been distilled, each one, so that they represent a pretty pure archetype.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it all interrelates.
Well, what's nice, what I love about this is, if, for example, your book and your conversation is you're actually embodying all these things that many of us would probably do well to do. Hey?
Wow, that's a great compliment. At least I'm trying. I don't know if I really am. It's a lovely thing to aspire to. But
well, just flipping through this book and reading some of the pages, you can't do it. We can't do it all. But
no.
There's, like, I just opened it to fertility, for example. There's so much about, I don't know, the feminine justice and nurturing and the empowerment, that it's going to take us quite a while to actually bring it back up into a world that hasn't accepted that.
Well, it will. And back to Ceres for a moment. I'm actually working on an article right now, my next article for Atlantis Rising, and I'm learning so much about that dwarf planet and therefore the myth out of which she came. And it's a fascinating thing because, again, I was aware of it but didn't have the kind of knowledge that you have to take time and really dig in and go back and see what's been written, what other scholars have said. So Ceres was a Sicilian goddess of grain, and her Greek predecessor was Demeter, and most people at least have heard the story of Demeter and her daughter Persephone,
right?
So most people at least vaguely know it, but what most people don't know, I didn't know, is that there were initiatory rites in ancient Greece that they believe came all the way from Crete, dating back more than 4,000 years ago. And what I found the most dramatic is the annual rites of Demeter, which really had to do with birth, death, resurrection, immortality, were thousands and thousands of people were initiated into those rites. They were the most well attended in all of Greece. And here's the big news. That lasted, if we want to call it a religion, for nearly 2,000 years, nearly as long as Christianity has lasted.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes. So here is this talk about a driving force that has been operating in some way. And so and then in modern times, just recent years, in 2006 was the year that Pluto was demoted to a dwarf planet.
Oh, gosh. With Ceres, a huge wallop, hello.
Oh, I tell you, Ceres was a planet for 50 years after she was discovered in 1801. And then she was demoted, and the irony and the paradox, because here again, those are two of the players in that myth, when Pluto was demoted, Ceres was promoted, and now they have equal status.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Isn't that fascinating?
It is fascinating, actually.
And so in the myth, of course, Ceres Demeter is the mother and Proserpina Persephone is the daughter, and Hades Pluto is the lord of the underworld who abducted and raped the daughter. So I find it
Are Ceres and Persephone interactive?
Yeah. Well, one was Roman or Sicilian, and one was Greek.
So oh, I see. But they're essentially...
That's the difference. They're the same archetype. So the mother is Ceres. And in the Sicilian myth, the daughter is Proserpina.
Uh-huh.
In the Greek story, it's Demeter and Persephone. But
well, you know,
exactly the same.
And this isn't probably, I don't know if this is correct, but I don't know that much about astrology, but through the years I've learned a lot through people like you. But it sounds like Demeter represents an eighth house goddess. Is that right?
I have really been grappling with this to decide. And I think that's a very good question. So whether she's the eighth house goddess or whether it's Pluto, the eighth house god, but I think...
But they have to be both of them, doesn't there?
Yes, there's a relationship. But I believe that Ceres is the ruler of the sign Virgo, who has been co-ruled by Mercury for a long time, didn't have its own planet, because essentially she represents the fertility of the Earth. What she represents is what's happened, and I think it's what's happened to the planet. That's why I find it fascinating that she's coming back into our consciousness in this way. This is like living the myth.
So you're saying the fertility of the Earth, meaning all the developments that have occurred on the Earth, all the creations for good and ill?
Yes. Well, she's and the annual growing cycle. Mm-hmm. She represents the seeds that are sown in the spring, and then the opposite part, the daughter going into the underworld, is the time of year when nothing grows, and then their reunion represents the flowering and the principle of the underworld. Now, at a deeper level, that's one level. At a deeper level, I think, and this is what I'm writing about right now, I think it represents, looking at our chart, what in our psyche is imprisoned someplace against its will, almost.
I love this.
What is it that needs to be reclaimed and brought to the surface, fully integrated, so that we can flower? And I think that's the myth and that's the work.
And then if I say to you, going back to what we were earlier speaking about, the archetype that's, I'm not sure if I've got you right here, but is the archetype what could be hidden that's pushing its way up for expression?
I think so. Mm-hmm. But that would be different for each one of us. In my case, it may have been too technical the way I said it, but the way I think it's operating in my own life, because I really only recently have become aware myself of how significant this is for all of us, and because of where it is in my life connected to Mercury, I think it has to do, and your question about my journey as a writer, my journey as a teacher, and it's as if now, with the way the planets have aligned, it's all coming to the surface of my psyche, and now I'm going to talk about it. I'm certainly not the only person that's doing that, but in a sense, my journey is unique like everybody else's is.
Well, and I think one of the biggest drives in our collective right now, in our human evolution, and you said I'm not the only one, and I think our authentication coming from myself and my authentic self is the turnaround that's going to make a huge difference on this planet for for the whole group, you know. The more self you can be, the more universal we can be, I think.
Oh, that's beautifully said. And yes, I think that's absolutely it. And we're watching in many ways, and of course that's where the drama is, that's where the media focuses, that's where all the sort of death throes of a way of being that wasn't working. And it's coming down around us, and that's very unsettling. But at the same time, I think it's so important to know that even though we might not see it yet as an outpictured form, a whole new way of being is happening. And what you're doing is part of that. That's exactly part of what you're doing. Who are the people? What are the things that are happening on the planet that are informing and energizing this shift?
Yeah, it's very exciting, isn't it? Thank you for saying that. And I'm just kind of fascinated by the amazing power that's in that, but many people can't feel it or see it yet, so it's kind of important to get people to catch the pulse.
Well, because there's a sense of free fall right now, that we know everything is, at some level, if we're honest, we know it's all falling apart. We don't know yet really what's coming in its place. It's a lot like being 9 months pregnant. You have this huge belly, and you believe that at the end of the ninth month, the baby's going to come out of it. But there's really a great deal of uncertainty and not knowing what it's going to be like, how life's going to be different. It's not a perfect analogy for sure, because a lot of people have already had babies. So,
yeah, but you know what? Idea. When we're talking about you, for example, in the writing and the actual, your voice is being born right now, I'm going, it really is all about birthing those deeper levels, which are, I was calling it pushing through, but I guess that's not quite the right.
It's more like an emergence, maybe.
Yeah.
No, that's exactly right.
I always like to play with the emergency of emergence.
Oh, that's good.
Because it's true. It's the same word.
Fiat Ananda, too, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's good to laugh with him.
So, he's great.
Yeah, so well, keep talking about, I mean, I love the way you're bringing together like the astrology, the archetypes, your own chart. And people don't really have to know their chart to actually hear you and understand what you're talking about.
No, certainly not. Certainly not. But I love what you just said about birthing from the deeper levels or bringing things, because that is this combination and is this relationship I'm seeing. I haven't had enough charts to look at it yet, but I, as I said, I suspect that it could be a whole book just in looking at this. This relationship between Ceres, the myth and rites of Demeter and Ceres that I mentioned, and what that means to journey to the underworld, because that myth exists in every culture too. Even in the Christian myth, that's what that was, the death and resurrection of Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's the same story.
And the dark night of the soul, isn't that
part? And the dark night of the soul, that's sure. Right. So it's, I think it is this journey that we all at some point are required to take. Of course, we can choose not to, and then we just, then we're a stagnation.
I'm just thinking the same thing. That's great.
I love that. Love that. I should have written that down. But
well,
that's
and
it.
I like what he says, which is called wake up laughing.
Yes.
Because, anyway, carry on, but that's a...
So I think that is the work that we all are meant to do at some point. I mean, whatever our philosophy is, whether or not we believe in reincarnation, whether or not we believe in some guided life or not, if you just look around, even if only we have this lifetime and the influence of our childhood, nobody emerges from childhood unscathed. Everybody has stuff that they carry with them that needs to be healed and let go of, and that requires absolutely in every case, I don't really think there's anybody exempt, that requires a journey into the underworld of our own consciousness.
So how would you recommend people do that?
Whew, what a big question that is. I mean, and it depends on the
person.
Well,
you've got lots of tools, darling, so you know.
Well, I think for some people, they may have been more damaged, or for some people, they may have bitten off a lot to chew in this lifetime, and they may need the help of a real professional therapist who's been trained to do depth psychology work. So that might be one thing. Certainly astrology is a great tool for people to understand the archetypes that are operating in their psyche and what their path is. I've been doing it 40 plus years, and I'm always, I remain in awe of how it works, even though science probably isn't any closer to understanding it. For some people, following a sort of shamanic path works. I think that whatever people choose, something like Buddhism fits for some people, where they actually have spiritual practices to look at, which take them into those same places. So I think it's a willingness to take the journey, and then typically, I'm sure you must see that too in people that you talk to. I think once we step on that path consciously and willingly and say, yes, I'm going to undertake whatever is required of me to cast out the demons from my past and, as you said, become as powerfully authentic as I can be right now, then the steps and the teachers and the processes reveal themselves along the way.
It's interesting how many, you talked at the beginning about symbols and Jungian awareness of symbols and so on. It's interesting how many bits of information are coming at us. So sometimes a good place to start is just being still and letting them talk to you too, isn't it? You know? Catch synchronicities, catch symbols.
That's a good one. And dreams, of course.
We
didn't mention dreams, but that's a way that people, again, from every culture all over the world, believe in the importance of learning to decode or translate the language of dreams. But synchronicities, boy, that's an amazing one. I mean, we use that word, and I think a lot of people may not even understand it, but again, in indigenous cultures, have sort of a frame of reference that, again, if we're open to it, then it's as if everything in our life can become a symbol in a way.
Yes, as you were talking, we were talking about authenticity and become, you know, digging deeply and becoming more yourself and all that. A great heron flew up and landed in the tree in front of us, and the heron is the symbol of that self-embodied truth kind of thing.
And birds always are also messengers from spirit or from the higher level consciousness. That's always what they represent because of their wings and moving in the element of air and being able to go between. Wow.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
That was perfect. I thought you must have set that up, did you?
Well, I don't take credit for that myself, but I do want to tell you that that's a good thing to say at this time, too. That was one of the processes of writing this book, doing the research. I moved into that realm that I guess I knew about, maybe that others might describe as the muses or whatever it might be, but it was as if at times I was existing in some sort of altered state. I don't know what to call it. I don't know what the right word would be, but I would, I mean, truly, sometimes things as seemingly odd as a book would fall off a shelf and open, and the pages would be open to a place that would prompt me to look at a goddess right in the area of the calendar where I was working or something that I needed.
Wonderful.
And it's just, that's a dramatic example. But I would have dreams. I would have these ideas pop into my head. And using that word synchronicity or maybe a state of grace would be a way to say it in a different way. We might not have a sort of new age way to describe the state of grace, but
I like that state. I'd like to be there.
But it's true, regardless of what we would say or what we associate it with, mm-hmm. we know what that means, I think.
Well, you know you're on the right track, and you know you're being directed. And,
yes.
It's wonderful.
It's the guidance and the sense of support that comes in that state, and I experienced that a lot. I don't know that I could call it forth at any moment or just invoke it, but
I think it usually, to me, when things, well, this is a little bit more trite. I was talking to my stepdaughter on the phone. She's in L.A. We were talking about my daughter going through something in Seattle. And whilst we talked, both of us had her car, the same car that she drives, go right in front of us.
Yes.
And that's a small synchronicity, but is a kind of a confirmation.
It is, and you get it gets your attention.
Yeah.
And when those pile
up. It makes you laugh.
I mean, if you have one occasionally, you can attribute it to chance. But when they happen on top of each other, day after day or hour after hour, there's a point at which you just have to say, this can't be just chance.
No, I believe.
Yeah, I believe. I'm not just imagining this.
No, it's wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, it is wonderful.
And I believe that if you have a lot of them and in your state of grace, I often say I'm from the altered states of America, but but in your state of grace, they just seem to be the flow of the time rather than, you know, sometimes in a normal 3D reality, they don't hit so many times, right? Oh, that isn't true either, because sometimes they'll hit a lot, so you get tweaked out of your, the trance of being in the third dimension, right?
Yes. The third dimension is almost like being drugged, I think. I mean, it operates in such a way that, or it's so linear that we can't experience the wider fabric of what existence is like or consciousness is like. And I think, I don't know how you feel with many different people that you've spoken to, love to hear that, but I think that is part of the paradigm that's shifting. We're moving, we're expanding from something that has been very linear, very hierarchical for a period of time, into something that's much more holistic.
And where we've thought for years, you just don't dare try to see beyond what's going on. That's just craziness.
That's right.
Right? And now it's like, get me beyond, right?
Yes. Yes. It's a remarkable time, and something else that I noticed it was part of this process for me, and how these goddesses seem to speak to me, too, is, other people are experiencing this. I started blaming it on just getting older, and then I would hear other people at all ages talk about it. It also seems like time is being altered, and I don't even know how to talk about this for sure, but my capacity to recall things is very different. I can't pull them up out of memory, it seems, the way I often used to. But then the flip side of that, or another aspect of that, is when I really need to know something and ask, then the information seems to come again in this amazing synchronistic way.
I agree with you entirely. That's really magical, isn't it?
It is. Mm-hmm. A little scary in the beginning until you can begin to trust it.
And I thought it was age for a while, and then I learned that we're processing 10,000 times more information at any given moment.
Wow.
Than we used to. So it's not, you're right, it's young people as well. But I agree with you, is all of a sudden you get the information you want, and it's out of the blue.
It seems to be out of the blue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10,000 times, I hadn't heard that. The way I heard it expressed was that people now get more information in a day than they got not even too long ago in their whole lifetime.
I know, isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So these little kids.
No wonder.
We need to teach the kids. Anyway, I want to go back to your book, because how would we use, there's so much I want to talk to you about, because you're just a wealth of information, my dear.
Thank you.
But how would we use this book to maximize its impact? I have some ideas, but I think you've probably got even more.
Oh, and I'd love to hear your ideas, too. Of course, I ask people as they're using it, there are some obvious ways. And it can be, because it's a circle and the year is a circle, it doesn't have to begin on January 1st. Someone can pick it up at any point. And one way to use it is to use it as a daily meditation or guide or just opportunity to be part of someone's daily reflection process. Some people like to use it first thing in the morning, which is how I do. Some people do it at noon, kind of a check-in in the middle of the day. And for some people, it's the last thing they do at night. They keep it by the bed, and that's what they do to maybe infuse their dreams with some part of this. And I created what I call the contemplations, and for a while I was calling them affirmations, and I realized that wasn't what I wanted or felt like. I wanted them to be more specific in a way and more like a call to action than just a positive statement. Mm-hmm. I really wanted them, and of course, to relate to the goddess of the day in a way that someone might really internalize what that goddess represented, as well as have a way to see if they could begin to experiment or experience that particular energy in their life.
I like your contemplations.
Oh, good.
Let's read a couple of them. I said to everyone that today was Shekinah, but actually we're doing a pre-record. So when you're hearing this, today would actually be bridges. And the contemplation is beautiful. It says, are there bridges of healing that need to be built in my life? And isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
It makes me think. Mm.
Yeah. And see, that's a practical question. That's, I guess, what I meant by a call to action, that it actually brings it into a personal question, a personal awareness. It's not just an abstract experience of some supernatural principle or being, mm-hmm. but how can I, in a very direct way, ask that question? Because I would venture to say that there's no one, us included, that doesn't have something that could be healed.
Oh, please, yes.
Yeah, some part of a relationship, or even if it's just an inner healing with some wound that we're still nursing in some way.
Well, when you said earlier you'd be interested in hearing what I'm learning with all these interviews or something of that ilk,
yes.
All I want to say on that is, over and over, I'm absolutely pleased at how infinitely possible we are, and it takes a lot of clearing. My guides always say 95% of the job is clearing. The wounds, what's hidden, the blocks, the old beliefs, you know.
Making way, making space.
And each of you that we talk with on this show shows more and more access to that amazing potential. We're amazing critters, aren't we?
It's true. And, you know, the Buddhists say that we already all have it, but it's a matter of remembering and in a similar way getting rid of what blocks that natural expression of our true nature.
And that's a huge thing, because we do, like we talked about, being in the third dimension, it's like a trance, right?
Yes.
That's a lot of releasing that we have to get to find that amazing self, huh?
It is, and I think I used the word amnesia before, and layers of forgetfulness, layers of protection, too, I think, that we've cemented over sometimes our hearts, our feeling natures because we're afraid of the pain. We don't want to feel the pain again.
Right.
So it's
And so one way I use this, which I think is relevant to what you're saying right now, is I walk by and I just flip it open and read.
Mm-hmm.
And the contemplation, for example, it sort of infuses me with something that kind of opens a part of me, and I begin to feel something that I might have been blocking or not allowing myself to feel, some kind of power, a sense of fertility, a sense of home, vision, divinely inspired. I can't remember them all now, but that's kind of how I've been using them. Just walk by, open it, and especially if I'm in a hurry, it throws my brain back into a more kind of a conscious, it's an infusion, as you used that word earlier.
That's a great word, isn't it? It really is. And as you've said that, that's such a lovely way that you described it. And I think that's how they were acting on me as well in the process of creating or being an agent through which this came into being, because I very much felt that way, that I had a lot of help. But I think they all acted on me that way as I was writing.
How wonderful.
Yeah. So hopefully I've come out of that whole process myself wiser and more able to meet these experiences and show up and be willing to do whatever it takes and allow all of that to... Because it's like a radiation of energy.
It is, isn't it? Yeah. Tell me about the archetypes. Are there... I mean, all right, you've gone through hundreds of goddesses, and they all embody these qualities that are so transcendent, or they're so healing for us all, men or women, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean that there are more archetypes than what we've been taught?
I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know that Jung ever tried to identify them. I mean, certainly the number 12 comes up a lot as a repeating theme in many different cultures. I mean, that's often a very common, and part of that, I suppose, is just because our year is divided into four what are called the cardinal points, the equinoxes and solstices, and then the halfway points between those. But I think my own sense is there are a limited number of archetypes, and that may be what happened. So let's maybe compare them to the notes of the musical scale that we use, or the colors of the rainbow or something, that there may be a certain number of primary tones, whether those would be sound or color,
mm-hmm.
but they can be combined almost infinitely.
I bet you, hey? So like in astrology, you're using the archetypes
right.
for each.
Same thing. Yeah, same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And people have said the ways that everything can combine in an astrology chart for different people is almost infinite.
Hmm.
You know, unless they're born same place, same exact moment, drawing their breath, and even then you have the other things of their genetics and their past that adds into it. So
that's fascinating.
That's my sense of it. I don't know how many there actually are. I've not probably tried to enumerate them in a way that I would say was all inclusive, but that would be my sense, that there are these primary identifications or expressions of energy that exist, and then the way they combine or the way they're accented or diminished or de-emphasized, then there can be this almost limitless combination between those to come up with different ways of being.
So if you're doing someone's chart, can you... would it be logical to say, well, you're completely short of... a certain, like the priestess?
Yes.
And so can you bring that in, sort of
thing? Exactly.
Mm.
That's exactly right. And that's what shows up in someone's chart. What's their predominant mode? Sort of what's their fallback? I can't remember who said this quote. I need to find it out because I love it. If your only tool is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail.
That's very cute.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
That made an impression on me when I heard it, because I thought, that's the way people are. We tend to get a comfort zone. We tend to have an MO that we relate to, and so that's what we trot out most of the time.
Right.
And the goal is to learn how to use every tool in the toolbox and know which one is appropriate for which circumstance. So yes, it's we can diagnose what perhaps is overemphasized and then take a look at what is weak or underemphasized, and people can very much, through using something like this book, through doing their own research of the archetype that's missing, and through doing their own bits of ceremony or recognition. So let's just say, to use an example, you mentioned the priestess, and in astrology that would be represented by the asteroid Vesta, who may herself become a dwarf planet, it looks like. There's a spacecraft on its way there now, going to get a close-up look at her in 2011.
Oh, wow.
So we might get another dwarf planet in the asteroid belt. But she's the priestess archetype from myth. And so let's say there is another goddess, let's say Ceres, who would be more the mother archetype. And let's say one is strong and someone's life experience shows that they've exaggerated the mother energy, but there is no sacred fire in their life. There's no temple time. There's nothing where they go within and experience that sense of the sacred. A person can choose to change that by introducing conscious ritual in their life, by making an effort to bring that in some way to balance it out. It's a very simple explanation, but very powerful.
And it starts with intending to link up to those things. So what is Ceres? I don't even know where Ceres is in my chart. Now I have to go back and do some more research.
That's right.
But you think it's really, really important, and Vesta is really important?
I think it's hugely important, and I'm now on a mission to astrologically to do that. As I said, I don't think I'm the only one, but I'm trying to do my own work and sense on this so that I can just, I'll say whatever I feel and maybe then have a chance to really look at what other people are saying about it. Because she was a planet for 50 years, she comprises at least a third of all the material in the asteroid belt. She is a dwarf planet. Not as big as Pluto, but closer. And I don't know any astrologer that's discarding the influence of Pluto because he got demoted. So I think there's this powerful connection, this information that can be realized about what might be sort of abducted from our psyche that needs to be reclaimed. And that there's a work of that, as we said before, kind of a journey into the underworld and bringing back some profound gift.
And that is also bringing back some of the feminine power.
Right? Yes. Yes. And the timing is no accident with everything else that's going on.
That's right. Yeah. It's very interesting, isn't it? So the personal journeying is really adding to the collective shift. I keep saying that because I believe that so much. Eh?
Well, also, it's a great way to say it.
Good.
And that's truly, I think, what this is. That's what I think Ceres represents, that journey into the dark side of ourselves. And dark side might not be. It's what exists probably as potential, because in the myth, it was the maiden, it was the daughter who was abducted. And while she was gone, the earth couldn't be fertile. Everything was dry and barren. So I think it's what in us is hidden or has been captured through whatever reason. It could be something that happened in this life or another, or a pattern that emerges.
Well, isn't it kind of interesting that fertility is a huge problem on our planet?
Indeed.
Which I think is because of what the robbing of the food and the, you know.
And water is becoming a problem, which is very feminine as well.
That's right. So that's really, it's really interesting. So does the Earth have a chart? Like, do you do one for the collective?
I was asked that question before, and because, you know, in theory, I suppose we could if we knew what was going on 6 billion years ago. But the Earth is certainly the Earth element and is represented by the goddess Gaia in many ways and other Earth goddesses around the planet. But I think, you know, that's an interesting thing astrologically, too, because what we call the sun signs are actually determined by where the Earth is in its orbit around the sun. And so we look at the sky and imagine which part of the sky the sun is moving through. It's actually us. So, astrologically, the Earth is always 180 degrees opposite the sun. So, like in my case, my sun is in Capricorn, my earth is in Cancer.
Oh.
And so for everyone, so looking at, and I do that too in charts, I look very seriously at the place of the earth and how that's being triggered by other things, because that too represents this part of the feminine that's hidden from our consciousness most of the time.
I guess I don't understand that. If my sun is in the eighth house in Gemini, where's my earth?
In Sagittarius.
Oh. So it's just opposite.
It's exactly opposite, 100 degrees.
Hmm.
I'm sorry, 180 degrees. On the opposite side of the circle.
Hmm. So again, how do we use that information?
I think if we understand it correctly, or at least explore it, I mean, this is my sense, and I'm not sure that I've heard anyone else really speak about it this way. But
I have not, so.
It's my own sense that it is where we need to become grounded.
Hmm.
Where is it that we need to sort of take our stand? Because the sun is how we're learning and projecting in life. So in your own case, if you have the sun in the eighth, your earth is in the second. So the place you would need to ground your identity is through your values, through what you possess on every level, and through how that blends with your philosophy of life.
That's very interesting, because that is a big issue for me. I have four planets in Gemini in that eighth house.
Oh, wow.
Sometimes grounding is not that easy.
No, that's true.
But I do ground in the deep underbelly of things quite often.
Yes, yes.
So that's why I asked if Demeter and Ceres, right? Our eighth house.
Yeah. And you know, it will be, email me and I can, and you know, if you want, and I can tell you where your Ceres is.
Well, and but the reason I'm bringing it up is not just to do me. Of course, I believe we have to be self-absorbed, become authenticated, but.
And that's where we have to start.
Yeah, and keep a sense of humor about it, not become too narcissistic. But the thing about the archetypes that's interesting to me, so we've got this Earth, the Sagittarian Sun Gemini thing in mind. So what's the archetype there? Is there an archetype?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you see that in the chart?
It's the seeker and the quester.
Mm-hmm.
And the Gemini side of it, the search typically is pretty close at hand. But if yours is in the eighth house, then you're going to journey beyond the veil as well. But on the other side of that spectrum is Sagittarius, where your earth is, where the search heads clear out to the stars. But the overriding archetype of that spectrum of energy of the two signs opposite each other is the search for the truth, where nothing else will do.
And that's where my values sit, actually.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, that's exciting, actually. So your archetypes, I'm fascinated by how the archetypes work. I guess I'll just have to work with you one of these days.
Well, I'd be honored to do that, of course.
So you need to tell people how to get a hold of you. I love your book. We went astray. We didn't just talk about the book, but you have so much information. You're taking people to Egypt, and we could have talked about Nefertiti, which we didn't, but the Egyptian goddesses are pretty exciting, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Well, people can reach me through my website, which is my name, julielaor.com, L-O-A-R, and that's sort of the best portal. I have a blog, and I'm on Facebook, both of which you can access through my website. I love to get emails from people. And the book is available anywhere that books are sold, either online or in stores.
And I love the book, Julie.
Well, thank you.
I told you how I use it, but I may do it. I may be more organized, but that may not be in this lifetime.
And that's okay. The beauty of it is you don't have to be, you know, it's a circle, so you can set down any place at any time.
Well, I get a really nice hit when I open it and read a page. I just feel good.
Thank
and feel
you
stronger.
So much. That's very confirming.
Oh, well, it was wonderful speaking with you, and I hope we can connect again.
I'd love it.
All right. You
Thank
take
you,
care.
Veronica.
And let us know before you go about your Egyptian trip. You're saying you're going on 11-11-11?
That's right.
Woo!
Powerful resonance.
That ought to be pretty transcendent for everyone. So tune in to that, everybody. Thank you again, Julie.
Thank you.
Well, that was a wonderful conversation with somebody who's covered a lot of transcendent territory with archetypes, astrology, travels, and this great book called Goddesses for Everyday, helping us all infuse our beingness with more of the feminine power that we've kind of lost through the years for a number of reasons. This is Veronica Entwistle saying thank you so much for listening, and we'll be talking to you Thursday night on Radiance by Design email me if you have any questions, if you have any suggestions, you have feedback about Julie, or if you'd like a session with me or with Julie, veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, no H in Entwistle. Many blessings. Again, thank you for listening. Good night.